In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey everybody, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours.
With Josh Knapp.
Hey Josh, how you doing?
Doing good today, Jim. How are you?
All right,
Josh. Today's a special day, huh?
I don't know about special.
Yeah, we got work to do.
Yeah, we got work to do. So actually first show of the year. And I wanna just go ahead and mention our sponsor here at EMS Office Hours. It's EMS Manager. And I encourage our listeners to go over to emsmanager.net, check out their free trial of a pretty innovative and easy-to-use sort of EMS employee scheduling and management software. So we'll talk a little bit more about them later on in the show, but just wanted to go ahead and give them a quick shout-out, thank them for sponsoring us here at EMS Office Hours, and go check them out at emsmanager.net and get that free trial.
Yes, many thanks.
I'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on in the show. But today's topic is actually – I have two little things on here. Before we get going, I think I have somebody in the caller queue, Josh. So I want to bring them off.
If not, bring them in.
We don't get all tied up and never get to them. Hello.
Hey, it's Bob.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
All right. Bob, I know what one of the topics that I want to talk about tonight, you actually did a blog post on, which was the Washington, D.C. EMS sort of had like a mass sick call-in on New Year's Eve, where they had just about almost the entire staff, I guess, over 100 of them called in sick New Year's Eve. And now... I'm wondering. I mean, they're saying, some people are saying that it wasn't a planned thing.
It sounds like
hard to believe.
I know it is hard to believe, exactly. So I don't know. To me, it seems one of the things that I want to point out. I mean, they said that there was one person had died because he was waiting for the ambulance for so long. I mean, whether that would have made a difference if he would have lived or not, who's to say? Cardiac arrest, the outcome's not all that good to begin with, But you still should be waiting. I think they said something like, 40 minutes? The guy was, they waited for an ambulance. So whether he was in arrest when he initially called or went into arrest while he was waiting, who's to say? But still, 40 minutes for an ambulance in any situation is just way too long, I'm reading the article here on EMS One. They talk about 11 ambulances were unmanned, and supervisors were asking for help from neighboring surrounding areas. And
now, did they give any backstory to how this came about, or was it just a spontaneous sick out? That been any friction going on in the Washington D.C. area?
Well, I think there's been for a while, right, Bob? I think there's been something going on there for a little while in D.C.
I think it always is.
Yeah.
I don't think there's ever been a time when there isn't any.
Yeah,
like I've been hearing this stuff lately about, Detroit making cuts and some of the over extreme way that some management has come down on people, that whole blanket thing, et cetera. So forth, but I really haven't heard anything other than the usual lousy working conditions coming out of D.C.
Yeah,
so has that been coming to a head, Bob?
I don't know. I haven't read anything more than the EMS One article.
Yeah, the only thing I see on the article itself, it just says that the union says it was not a coordinated effort, despite prior disputes that they're having.
Of course they're going to say that. My God.
I was looking at some of the comments. I'm trying to see if there's anybody that would own up to it.
It's like, because what happens is
between the labor and DC fire department and things like that. But I'm not sure who's really benefiting from something like that, or who's
nobody.
Yeah, I mean, I think more people are suffering than anyone's really benefiting from that.
Well,
yeah, this isn't the way to do that.
Yeah,
that's true. But attention gets brought, and one of the things that tends to happen in these situations is, you know, there's a play on the good spirit of the people who are working there, saying, listen, you know, I'm working under some horrible conditions. These conditions have to change.
Yeah.
And they get the comment, yeah, things will change.
Right.
But they don't ever change. So, you know, eventually – people get tired of waiting.
Yeah. You know, Bob.
I wrote that if you want to make a statement like that, I think it's much more effective, and they do this in other cities. I know that Toronto's union president, I believe, had something about how many hours they're forced to work overtime. Just don't work overtime. You know, that's these chronically short-staffed systems. I mean, show up when you're supposed to be there for your 48 hours or whatever, and just don't work any extra. And,
you know what? That's not as simple as you say there. You know, and not just to point out, because I'm sure you are aware of it. It's not always another shift of overtime that they're talking about. It's the late jobs.
8:28
Yeah, I think it's also some places too end up getting. They have mandation requirements where you can get mandated for up to a certain amount of hours without even wanting to. It's overtime, but you're mandated for the overtime.
Yeah.
So, but if you're going to pick a fight, if you're going to pick a fight like that, I think that it's a lot easier to argue in the media and get some sympathetic headlines rather than doing something like that on a holiday and looking like a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, I think it makes I think EMS look bad. You know, also when you've got this mentality of doing something like that. I mean, you know, even the guys that end up showing up to work ended up suffering because you know they're running around all night like crazy people trying to cover all these calls.
Which, if you've ever worked New Year's Eve, you are anyway.
Right, you're busy to begin with.
It's back to back calls.
Yeah.
So, you know, would these guys notice anything really different? I don't know. I know that they would have a heavier patient load regardless because of the night. Well, the only thing I'm saying, and it's not really in defense of that type of action, but there has to be more to the story is sort of how I'm looking at this.
Yeah,
I don't think we're getting the complete picture.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to owe up to the fact that they did it because of differences with management or the union versus the DC fire department or anything like that. But you know, it just to me, like I said, I think that there wasn't, like Bob had mentioned too, I don't think there was a lot of thought that went into this, because I think what ends up happening is the fact that you do end up looking like the bad guys by doing it, you know. Because, you know, you could have done it in a more positive way instead of something like this. I mean, because to me, I think the article itself, you know, ends up, and I'm sure local media probably picked it up, and it looks like it's 100% negative towards the workers and not really against the fire department.
Of course it's going to be 100. Even, remember the transit strike here in New York a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
And if you remember, the back detail of that story was EMS was sitting there and they still were without a contract after 4 years. And they were doing some comparison. They were doing a little bit of griping, but they were way shouted out by the strength of the transit union, who said, you know what? These guys have had enough. This is what they're doing. Their demands aren't being met by management. They haven't had a contract change in 2 years or whatever
it
was.
Right.
And it was so trivial compared to the issues with EMS, yet EMS does not have that choice. That is not an operative that's not an operation in the EMS playbook that can be used.
Yeah.
We have to be there. It's the same as fire and police.
Well, and the other thing is, in D.C., there's lots of, and I know this is easier, much easier to say than it is to actually do, but if you work for D.C., there's several, very high-paying fire departments that hire paramedics around there. So you have, mobility options. And one of the articles when D.C. comes up is that you have, they lose people, they come to D.C. I'm sure you see this in New York, too. They work in D.C., get a few years of experience, and they go work for one of the counties that, where the working conditions are better and the call volume
right.
is less.
Yeah.
So, if you're that miserable there, leave. don't call out sick on New Year's, or don't have 100 people call out sick on New Year's Eve to try to make
yeah.
a statement. It just makes us all look bad.
Yeah, I mean, and like, some of the art, what's his, I kind of say last name?
Sia.
He had a short little comment on it on EMS 1-2, talking about, leadership and the lack of, esprit de corps and stuff like that, when it comes to why you would do something like that, But at the same time, he's all talking about supporting an organization, Josh, like you mentioned, but if they're not supporting you at all, it's like, why, you're taking advantage of what's laid in place, which is the fact that you can call in sick, on a holiday like that and not have to really back it up, there's nothing saying you have to back that up anywhere.
Talking about when you have a sick system and talking about a lack of esprit de corps, it is sort of like blaming the fried chicken for the heart attack.
Yeah.
There's a contributing factor, but that ain't the reason.
Yeah.
This is a tough thing because my feeling on this. I feel that EMS is the bastard red-headed stepchildren. It's really kind of interesting because there's a I won't even give out his rank. He's a long time. He's a career EMS fire department guy and a friend of mine on Facebook. And he put a big reply to somebody who basically – somebody had announced that they were being promoted into the fire service.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as some people may know, in the New York City Fire Department, some odd years ago, EMS was an independent city organization that was sort of had some issues. And they were basically adopted or absorbed by FDNY. So now in New York City, you have FDNY Fire and you have FDNY EMS. And the lines are getting ever more blurred every year, but they're still pretty distinct. And back in the day, they used to be very, very distinct. So much so that they had issues with how many minorities that they actually had. And, FD would say, oh, we have a fully integrated system. And the truth is that EMS maybe had, 70% integration, whereas the fire side or suppression side, as they say, had maybe 20%. So, things have changed. Go ahead. Okay. Things have changed a little bit, but it's still, a lieutenant in the fire department is going to make, 20% more than a lieutenant in EMS. EMS is 25 and out. Fire is 20 and out. So, there are subtle changes, and they're still treated as two different areas. And where this basic post came up from was that he was reading a post of a friend who was getting promoted to firefighter. And he doesn't begrudge anybody the chance to earn a better living or to, work in a job that they want to, that has certain benefits and perks. But what really got him was some of the people who were leaving replies to that posting that basically said, congratulations, now you're on a real job.
Yeah.
And he had to take pause at that, and it's like, really? Like, EMS is not a real job? And he goes into all of the litany of dangers and things that we deal with on a daily basis in EMS that don't really get credit for. And I remember saying on this show, you know, a year or so ago when we were talking about, you know, EMS and my sister-in-law, who is considered a fairly educated person, said, oh, well, you know, you're a paramedic. You don't really do a dangerous job. And anybody in EMS bristles at that. But the point is that I'm tired of being the redheaded stepchild and the other services getting the credit for the difficulty of the job, even so much as, like, transit services get credit for being more of a job or more of a recognized. You know, in New York City, if you struck a transit person, now it's considered a felony, the same as if it's striking a cop. It's still not that way for EMS unless they're on duty.
Yeah.
Where when I started my first job, the paramedics were, if you could get a job working as a security, doing basic first aid, if you could, you know, the hot jobs that paramedics would, like, fight for was a union security guard at one of the auto manufacturing plants. Now, they're not all open anymore, but, you know, the amount of money that you could make doing that and the amount of work that you would do on a day-to-day basis, you know, working, doing system status management in an urban environment, was just so much better. And I'm thinking, and I'm not, you know, begrudging anybody. That's an important job. But, I mean, should that really be something that you aspire to do when you're a paramedic? But that's the way it is in a lot of areas.
I think, like you said, too, Bob, like with these people calling sick, is that there are those options. If you're that unhappy with your job and you feel you're being treated that unfairly in so many disputes and you don't feel like you're getting anywhere, I mean, you can go to other places to work and find other means of employment. It's not that easy, and I guess the other side of that is, well, why should I? Why should I have to go find someplace else to work? I'm in a fire department. I'm in a union shop. You know, I just feel like, you know, I'm not being treated fairly, or I'm not getting a certain amount of benefits that I feel, you know, I'm entitled to. You know, so you got both sides of the coin there that holds, if you don't like it, leave attitude.
Yeah, well, I bristle at that one, Jim. I really do. I mean, I've heard that one before. It's like, you know, you don't like the hours, go get a job at Macy's at the counter. You know what? That's not the same job. It's not the same sort of.
Well, I'm not saying get a job at Macy's. I'm saying get, like Bob is saying, another job as a paramedic doing it someplace else. You know.
Well, if you're miserable enough to call out sick on New Year's Eve to make some sort of statement, then you should probably be looking for another job.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad, like, you know, that they were talking about. I mean, I'm sure even the guys that were working, they, you know, something tells me that if the situation there is that frustrating for them, I'm sure the guys that were working probably feel the same way as far as any kind of disputes going on, but they actually showed up. You know, and they ended up getting the, sort of the shit into the stick because now they're the ones doing all this work, you know. And the article mentions about lifting a cap, an overtime cap, but the guys that were still there, most of them didn't, you know, what did they say?
Something? Didn't take it.
Yeah, two out of 50 that were offered it took it.
Yeah, you know.
The rest of them
No,
I'm going to go home.
Anybody who's worked New Year's Eve knows it's a pitch tour. It's a hard, you know, it's a blood money tour. And, you know, it's like when you pick up New Year's Eve you're working overtime, it's money, man. Other way to say it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'd like to see if there's any follow-up on this and see what goes on, you know, see if there's any follow-up or maybe somewhere it'll come out as to why it actually happened. You know, I'm not really too hip on focusing on the guy that died because, I'm not sure if that's really the reason why he died because of this whole, you know, call out or if, you know, or what the case may be. You know, so I'm not going to blame the call out, you for this guy dying.
You know, that sounds like a publicity sort of thing. Look
yeah.
how terrible it was.
Right.
We're out. I mean, you know, I really do. I agree with you, Jim. You need to take a pound of salt with that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
But again,
it does
sound like it was a coordinated sort of thing. I can't see it that many people one night, and you got to be pretty gullible to think it's just a big coincidence, you know, on a holiday for that many people to call in sick. So hopefully something, you know, there'll be some clarification coming down the line as to why that happened. Or maybe things will get better for them so it won't happen again. Maybe it will work.
Well, what's going to be interesting is to see if this starts happening elsewhere in the country in other stress systems. Because D.C., although it is a system that's been in the paper and been in the news as being a stress system, it sure shit isn't the only one out there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. Well, I guess we'll have to maybe revisit that in a month or so if anything else comes out of that. Bob, I appreciate you making that post on your blog post there. People go check out your blog at EMS Patient Perspective and take a read on that. There'll be a link to that in the show notes, of course. People can go check that out. But go read Bob's take on it. It's worth a good read there. And also the EMS One article as well. I'll put that link in the notes also. I think, Bob, I think you wrote more than the article itself.
Yeah.
Well,
I have some
opinions.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a good thing. I mean, you know what? We should have opinions, and we should be vocal about those opinions, and getting them out there. Because if it's continually ignored, and if we ignore it, then everybody's going to ignore it.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, other people are going to ignore it sooner than we do anyway.
Yeah, that is true. It'll get, you know, unless something major goes on, it'll still be sort of an internal fight between the firefighters and medics and the management there. You know what I'm saying?
The question is, and you know, this sort of occurred to me during this conversation, is what can we do as a profession to sort of bring this discussion, I won't even say fight, but this discussion that there is a difference between suppression and the medical side, and that there is a difference in treatment as well. So it becomes more of a public discussion. Because I think, you know, that people really don't see the difference. If you have a community EMS and it's run by the fire department, they don't see a difference whether you're putting out a fire or attending to somebody's stubbed toe.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know? They're it's sort of, you know, it started with Roy and Johnny, and I believe, and lots of smart, you know, people will disagree with me, whose opinion I respect, but I think that EMS has just evolved into a specialty, you know, beyond the fire service. Like, you know, we sort of mesh it, you know, we sort of mash it together in some communities. In other communities, EMS is a, you know, one of the many roles of the fire service. I think it's interesting. I know we were had a podcast, one of the first ones I was on, where they talked about the public safety officer, where you do all three. And Too Old to Work, Too Young to Retire had a post about a police department that was merging with the fire department. And the fire department was like, well, that's crazy. You can't have firefighters in comp. But we think nothing of having firefighters and paramedics. I think they're two
separate jobs.
They're two separate jobs.
There's
certainly some overlap. There's some overlap between law enforcement and,
right,
and, you know, in our EMS, where, you know, verbal de-escalation and other things. And, you know, when the fire department has a very powerful lobbying group, advocates for fire service EMS, that argue that, you know, because the house might be on fire with the person having chest pain, paramedics should be trained to put out fires too. And I don't believe that.
That's, you know, in a lot of systems, you know, if you get one or the other and you become a firefighter paramedic, you become one of the top paid individuals in that system. I know San Francisco's fire department works that way. So if you become a paramedic firefighter in their system, can be a top paid guy with the base salary of, you know, in the high 70s.
Huh.
Well, and the question is, do you want to become, you know, and a lot of times to get, in order to get promoted at the fire department, they want you to be a paramedic too. And, you know, D.C., I believe, has something similar to New York with a sort of separate but equal, you know, they're under the fire department, but EMS has a separate command structure. And I think they have they have like fire department paramedics. They ride the fire trucks, but then the paramedics, I believe, and this is, you know, this, if I'm wrong, someone please correct me, they have a separate division of paramedics that work on the ambulances. And, you know, there's a lot of friction, you know, where people don't know the difference. And the article said 100 firefighters called out sick, but they only mentioned
right.
ambulances going out of service.
I noticed that, too. It's funny.
Were they firefighters, or were they...
Right,
were they
can't even say what they were, if they were EMTs, were they medics. That's the thing, too.
Right.
Were they all paramedics? Were
because
they
don't count.
Mix?
They don't
yeah.
count. You know, what's kind of interesting is that you look on... I know in Long Island that that there's so many volunteer fire departments that EMS was taken under... The official EMS was taken under by the police department. Which is, you know, kind of unique. I don't know there are the many systems out there where the police actually run EMS.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a comment in the chat room from Wicked Smart, which I would guess would be from Boston, if I were guessing. He says, a freaking man, fire wants EMS because that's the majority of calls. Yeah, I mean, they're in the days when things are getting – safer from a fire perspective, and we have all of these systems that and these less vulnerable materials that we build with, you know, there are statistically less fires, and the way that you keep your funding going is by call volume. So what do they use? Why do they take in EMS? Because there's call volume in EMS, and that's growing call volume.
Yeah, right. It's not going to go anywhere.
But
it's not going to get any less.
People get better and better understanding of when to call an ambulance. Keep in mind, there aren't – how many times do you see those programs out there of when do you call a fire truck versus when to call an ambulance?
Right.
You know? So there's always going to be that pressure, that sort of public educational system of calling ambulances. And that's growing.
I am
indeed from Boston.
Well, I'll tell you
– thank you.
You want to talk about, you know – talking about the increase in calls and all, but that's still leading on to our next little topic here. But before I get to the next topic, I do want to take a few seconds here, guys, and mention the sponsor for EMS Office Out, which is EMS Manager.
You mean you're paying the bills?
I don't know about that, but you know they've taken the opportunity to jump on board and sponsor us, so. I do suggest people to go out and try the software that they have for themselves. They offer a free trial there, and the software really tries to take the chore out of employee scheduling and management of EMS providers, and it really makes it easy to set that up and easy to maintain it, easy to management. And they even have a mobile app, which you can get through your smartphone and other mobile devices as well, and also the easy to use web face interface that they have as well. And you can get the web face interface from anywhere online. So managers can do it, staff can do it, everyone can oversee it. They can manage, make requests or changes to the employee schedules if they want from pretty much anywhere, the mobile app or the web base. So the actual pricing is kind of based on the size of an organization. So it's really affordable because it's not like a blanket price. You know, there's not going to be this whole crazy, you know, astronomical thing if you got a smaller organization. So it's affordable because of it being web-based, you know, the web apps and all. and the employee's schedule and the software is located in the cloud. And of course, we know the cloud means that there's no additional costs for IT uses to worry about. So always free training as well. There's free tech support through them and a free system software updates. So if you want to try this out for your system, guys, you can, again, check out the free trial. It's customizable trial, EMS Manager as well. It's at emsmanager.net. So again, guys, I want to thank EMS Manager for sponsoring EMS Office Hours this month, and you know, a lot of other favorite EMS programs that are out there too. I know that they're also sponsoring the one Union 81 webcast as well. They're sponsoring a bunch of podcasts over the ProMed Network as well. And EMS Manager is really happy and proud to support EMS providers and managers throughout the sponsorship that they're giving us here and all the support of what we do as EMS professionals. So go ahead and return the favor, everyone. Go check them out. Share your support. Show them that, you know, you're supporting us and them by checking out that free trial at emsmanager.net. That's Adalactex, Aladtex. A-L-A-D-T-E-C, a LATEX, EMS Manager, and they're for online employee scheduling and workforce management. Again, guys, emsmanager.net, not .com, .net, and get your free customized trial of an amazing employee scheduling and management tool.
Wow. The end. That was good.
Yeah, listen, I've been sort of, you know, looking at it a little bit. I haven't had a chance to get deep into the program yet. But I signed up for my free trial. I'm customizing a little bit because I want to make a couple of screencasts for the blog so people can kind of take a little look from what it looks like on my end as well if they're hesitant about signing up for a free trial. So I encourage people to go ahead and do that. And don't forget, not for nothing, this thing would have come in handy, right, for the freaking sick calls that they just had in D.C. If they would have had this program, they might have been helped them out a little bit of getting those shifts covered from maybe people that were home or didn't call in sick or weren't working.
You know, I think that we went over to a online management system, and I work at a fairly big organization, but I always was a little bit on the more paranoid side, and I would think that maybe there were some games played, maybe some shifts got picked up by people who, you know, got first in or whatnot. And this really evens the playing field. When you get online, you automate your management system. It takes the games out of it, and it lays it out there. It's pretty clear. It's pretty straightforward. It's the direction we're all going in. You can get updates
all
on
web-based,
your cell phone,
your apps, all the stuff that you're using on just about everything else you're doing. So if you can have Angry Birds in your smartphone, you can have this in your smartphone, you know, from your manager, and be able to go ahead and, you know, manage your schedule, pick up shifts, give away shifts. So it's all good stuff there.
Right.
And part of, you know, I talked a little bit, Josh, before we, I thought I'd mention to give a little bit more details on EMS Manager, but about call volume, right? Part of the show tonight, I had asked just sort of a simple question as far as how long you've ever waited to transfer a patient, you know, for a bed, you know, how long you wait at ED to get.
I know, we were talking about this before, it's insane.
Well, you know, the question I initially got it from a thread I saw over in Gems Connect, and this was in England, and they were asking some opinions there, because the medics there had to wait 2 hours to get a bed, and some people came back with, well, that's sort of long, but I've waited 4 hours. I've waited, I've actually got some replies for some of the things that I did in Twitter. And over on etcity.com, I had asked that question too, and they were like 12 hours for a bed. So much so that you can spend the entire shift waiting for a bed, and your relief will come and, you know, take over, and you'll go home, and they'll sit there waiting for the bed right after you.
That's insane. That's, you know, again, there's something more to that. that's a broken system. That's not necessarily a crew or anything else. There's something wrong with that. Because as a patient, I mean, you know, you and I, Jim, have done some long transports. And at the end of those transports, how does the patient feel on that cot? So is that the place that, you know, somebody wants to be? And even as a standard of care, I got to tell you, there's another aspect here. Because, you know, when you get into transport, you start learning a little bit more about decubitus ulcers and things like that. Mm. And, you know, the question is, how long does it take for a bed sore to start to form? And most people go out there and say, you know, several hours a day, a couple of days a week. And it's actually minutes. And that's the thing that's that's the scariest. Now, if you sit somebody in a stretcher, where are they going to go? You know, you're almost guaranteeing that they're going to get an ulcer.
Yeah. I just, you know, the two-hour time frame here, the 4 hours that I'm reading, and the 4 hours are all either in England or in Canada. I mean, personally, I've waited, I think the longest I've ever waited was maybe over 3 hours in an ER waiting for a bed. You know, my thing is, and this is something looking at the comments, is beyond the whole wait time, right, is people talking about how, you know, they go in, they'll just sit there. They won't be getting triage, nothing to be going on. They'll just sit there because there's no beds. The nurses don't even come over and triage them. But the patient will get registered while they're on the stretcher, but they won't be getting triaged. So you don't even know if they even need a bed. They might be able to get downgraded and get sent out to a waiting room, get sent out maybe to like a fast track area or something like that. Instead, they just sit on the bed. I'm reading some of these comments about how they just sit on the – they'll sit on the stretcher and not even be triaged, you know, while they're waiting. So they'll get registered, you know, they'll get the insurance information and the patient's demographics and all that good stuff. But they're not being, you know, triaged. So you don't even know, do they need a bed? Maybe they can get a bed in the hallway. Do they need a bed, you know, a critical bed, a telemetry bed? What do they need, you know? And there was back and forth where, you know, it's like unbelievable how some people say, you know, that they just can't believe that the registration comes before triage, you know. It's just amazing. One person said that, you know, we put the patient in the waiting room who had aspirations concerned and maybe even a fractured pelvis prior to even being seen by a nurse, you know. So it's like you said, it's like the system's broken. With some of this,
you know, there's another aspect that, you know, sort of occurred to me, and I'll be a little paranoid about it, but it, you know, you say that all these things are coming out of either Canada or England, and with the discussion of healthcare in the States and the idea of, you know, socialized medicine, if you want to put a name on it, or single payer systems out there. There's a lot of political force to say that these things are really bad and dysfunctional and don't work. And
these are from the medics that are working there. They're not being said by, you know, they're being.
Do we really know that they're from the medics that are working there?
Well, that's like a true liberal. That's what you're going to say. So.
Well, you know, even not getting into the political end of this.
But you are getting into it.
No, what I'm saying is that this is a very hot issue and it can be manipulated. And so, you know, are you certain that it's – because, listen,
are you certain?
From a practical point of view, from a practical aspect, if you had a patient that had to go to the hospital, would you sit there and wait – and this is one of the things that we were discussing before – would you sit there and wait 12 hours – with a patient on your bed, knowing all the problems.
You don't have a choice. I guess this is why, you know, I'm bringing this up to the show, because it seems like there are some places where this happens, you know. You know, it seems that there are some areas that this is, you know, going on. And I mean, there are some U.S., you know, people that chimed in and, you know, mentioned that they you know, not 12 hours. Like I said, like as long as I've waited, maybe 3 hours. Some people have waited, you know, a few hours, 45 minutes, you know, things like that, you know. So I guess it depends upon the system that you're in.
The situation that you're in and where it is and when it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some hospitals get penalized if the ambulance is there too long. You know, the
system gets penalized. In New York City, they're now doing this thing where they well, we've always known about redirection. We've always known about the, what's the other one? Where there's just, where the hospital gets basically, yeah, that's redirection. But there's now another, another level. If they're not clearing people through triage fast enough, they get put on like a standby status. You're no longer allowed to bring patients there, and that affects the hospital's bottom line. And the way hospitals work now is to, you know, get patients through. So if you're waiting out there for 3 hours, does that mean somebody is in the emergency room and waiting for to be seen for three hours?
Yeah, the problem is, too, I think that, you know, when, as far as, like, behind the scenes, the stuff that we don't see is when the hospital, when you go to the hospital and they triage you and they register you, now, as far as they're concerned, the patient's in the hospital. They're, you know, they're in the ED. You know what I mean? They're not saying anything as far as when we're done with the patient, when the patient's off of our stretcher. So when the hospital looks at their stats at the end of the month, the ambulance came in, they were triaged, they got registered. I'm not seeing anybody waiting 45 minutes, you know, for a bed because they have no idea. Because as far as they know, as far as the computer's telling them, it's telling them when the patient was registered, when the patient was triaged, and they don't know how long we've been sitting. The patient could be on, like you said, it could be on our stretcher in a room. I mean, how many times did that happen? Put them in, you know, we have no beds right now, go to room, whatever, and now you're sitting there with the patient on your stretcher, sort of babysitting while they're trying to find a bed. And then, like we mentioned before the show, Josh, sometimes us as providers end up sort of breaking the rules by wandering throughout the hospital halls trying to find an empty bed to bring to the emergency room.
I've been there, done that.
And I've done that. I've done that myself. You know, you go to the way in the back in the super secret squirrel area and find yourself a bed and bring it
right
up.
Right next to where they keep the wheelchairs.
Yeah, and I always love when you do that. And the nurse, where'd you get a bed from? Oh, I found it.
Right. It magically appeared. I left my little bed beads down and watered them, and I got a bed.
And a point that you made, too, Josh, for the show is that what about the patients? So we bring these patients into the emergency room, right? How many of them really even need a bed in the ER? How many of them can go out to triage? And the hospital is that backed up where you're sitting out there with your patient waiting, you know, for half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours for a bed, whether you're triaged or not, and now you've got somebody that comes, walks into the ER with a chest pain, does that mean they have no beds for that person? What happens to that person?
Right. That's what I was saying before. Yeah. And I think that what they do is, and what I've seen them do on very busy times or when there's a sort of a mini swarm that occurs, is that, you know, if you were in a bed because it was a courtesy, you know, you're a little older or something else like that, but you don't really need a bed, guess what? You get displaced.
Yeah.
So I've seen people taken out of beds and put into chairs.
Yeah.
And even that is considered.
Well, yeah, I've seen how many times you go to a hospital too, and they're like, "Well, does this person need? Can this person come out of this room now? They've been worked up. They've had whatever. They don't need to be on the monitor anymore, or they don't need the oxygen anymore. Can they come out into a hallway and you move your patient goes into the room because you're bringing in by ambulance and you have a patient who needs oxygen or medications or whatever the case may be, and they need to be in a room that, with a monitor and all so they can be, you know, evaluated and everything by the staff. One question, too, that seems to come up and it sort of baffles me a little bit is some of the comments made that, well, while we're waiting, we continue doing all our protocols. you know, while we're with the patient. They'll still sit there and, you know, work, keep working the patient up and keep treating the patient and, you know, as they're waiting
and that is,
an hour
that's
for
a
the
gray
bed,
area right
for,
there.
Yeah, because I can't believe that.
I've heard, you know, I mean, it's been explained to me that once you pass the threshold of the doors,
right.
the patient's, the hospital's responsibility, your
right.
protocols no longer are in effect.
Yeah.
It's just like when you walk up into the ED and there's a patient on the bed and they're trying to tube them and nobody else is around. They're waiting for respiratory to get down because nobody's very familiar with, you know, intubation. And, you know, somehow I have heard stories where the paramedic will step in and intubate the patient right then and there. Now, if you think about it, what a risk that they're taking with their professional standing because
yeah.
they have no business operating under those guidelines.
I know. It's like now this is the question that I threw out there prior to the show is like when does the pre-hospital care stop? I mean, now you're in the hospital. You know, I mean, if they don't have a bed, fine. But why aren't they treating the patient? Why aren't they the ones, you know, it's just where the patient is. It's on our stretcher versus their stretcher. If they're, you've been triaged and you've given your report and all, why are we responsible now to continue this treatment, you know?
And that's where
especially
we go back
about drugs.
To square one.
Yeah.
And that's where we go back to square one. There's something broken in the system. There's a standard of care that is supposed to be adhered to in a hospital environment for a sick patient. Just like the idea that if you come in with chest pain, you have to be seen in so many minutes or they're not adhering to standard
yeah.
of care.
Yeah.
And although we live in a fairly litigious society, these are some of the reasons why lawsuits actually happen, because there is a deviation from, you know, a care, a standard that most people or all people should be afforded. And I think that when you have these situations and these stories where – and you know what? I'm sure that they are the exception and not the rule. Otherwise, we'd be hearing a lot more of these things. But if you heard of these systems where people were waiting for hours at a time, you'd really think it was a third world nation. You know, that would be, then be, you know, sort of understandable. But it's very difficult to see in a modern EMS system that somebody waits around for 12 hours before they get off an EMS stretcher. I find that very hard to believe. And, you know, if it is true, then why aren't there more stories about it? If it's more true and commonplace is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to me, I mean, I don't know. I think 12 hours has got to be a
12 plus hours. Remember the story
yeah.
went that they waited 12 hours, the shift ended, and then another shift came to relieve them, to come to the hospital and relieve them.
Yeah.
And, you know, when have you ever gone, when a crew's been on a job, when have you ever gone to that hospital to relieve that crew? You know, they have to get back. Part of the job is getting back to home base. That's where you get to switch out.
Yeah.
How do they leave that crew? You know, isn't there narcotics? Isn't there books to be signed? Isn't there stuff to be checked? Aren't there radio batteries to be changed?
You would think.
You know, this whole thing smells a little bit. It's all I'm saying, Jim. You
well,
know?
It's not just it's not just one comment. I mean, it's several different comments, you know, from different people, you know, from different areas. It's not just one focusing on one person or one story. It's a couple of different stories, people giving their different versions. You know, like I said, that the Canada thing, I saw that was a Twitter post, and then I got that on EMT City, and then the UK thing was in
yeah.
the GEMS deal. You know, and they were, like I said, that was 2 hours, and they said 4 hours. You know.
Was that a GEMS story? Was that GEMS like
yeah,
a?
Yeah, it was a GEMS story that they made a. It was a GEMS story that they made a post with inside GEMS Connect about. You know, the thing is that to me, like I said, beyond the wait times, you know,
walks like a duck and quacks like a duck.
You know, beyond the wait times for me is this whole perception that we have to continue everything we can do for the patient. We have to bring everything into the hospital, the drug box, the intubation kit, our oxygen, our monitor batteries. You know, I mean, I had a patient the other day myself that I had on the monitor. It was a rapid AFib, and bring him to the hospital, and we had to wait for a bed. And it wasn't that long. It was maybe 20 minutes or so. But I'm watching my batteries drain down on my monitor, you know. So at what point what am I supposed to do when I have no more juice, you know? Start screaming that there's no, I have my monitor's dead now? You know, it's like at what point do you actually have to, like you said, we have this perception, and my understanding is that when you walk through those doors, it's their patient.
Right.
You know, even to the point of them signing for the patient.
Well, I've been in situations where the nurse mistakenly believed that if they held us up, then they would get a lower call volume because the ambulances, you know, there's only so many ambulances that can fit in a bay.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sometimes has to be explained to them rather slowly that, no, that's not how the system works. That all you're doing is you're depriving the system of one ambulance, spreading the workload amongst everybody else. But I'll be honest, you know, this whole thing about waiting these extraordinary amount of hours, and I could see waiting a few hours. I've been in the situation I've waited.
And again, that should be the exception, not the...
And normally, and Jim, I'll tell you something. I can guarantee you one of the reasons why I was waiting so many hours is because I had a non-acute patient who called the ambulance,
right,
who thought they would get in, and two or three stretchers get pushed ahead of me because they have an acute patient.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, you know, backing up a little bit, again, if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, you know, there's probably something more to this story. That's all I'm saying. Not everything on the internet is true.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
It better be. We're on the internet. It better
be. I happen to be a French model, don't you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure.
Well, like I said, to me, I think that these long wait times are probably an exception no matter where you are. I don't think it's an average. I think, because again, like we mentioned earlier, I think if you end up waiting for, you know, too long, then the hospital is getting penalized because you're not putting the ambulance back in service. That's not back on the road, back on the road covering the system. And then, the hospital looks bad. And again, you've got to, the whole thing with being able to say you're on diversion. You know, some hospitals don't want to do that. Have you ever had that situation where you have, the med control doc or whoever the doc's in charge of the ER will not put the hospital, not put the ER on diversion?
Well, that's what it is, diversion versus redirection. What they have now in New York City is they have where diversion has to originate from the ER doc, basically saying, listen, we're at our max capacity. We have so many patients that we could treat. We cannot accept any more ambulances at this time, and it's a courtesy. Whereas redirection is brought on by a fire department field officer who says, you are not triaging our units fast enough. You are keeping units tied up and out of service. So therefore, until you get – and now it's like if there's more than three units there for more than 20 minutes, you go on redirection. And it's sort of a punishment to the hospital because even though they can take more patients in, it sort of keeps the flow down until they release our ambulances.
Right. Yeah.
It's a fight over dollars in the end, right?
Yeah, right, because we're not getting in many patients now because of that. I don't know. I just find it – I thought the responses I got on ENT City were interesting, and just reading some of the comments and stuff, you know, from these threads are just interesting to me. You know, the help, because some of the providers are responding, they act like it's not a big deal. And, oh, well, we wait 45 minutes and we still do all our protocols while we're waiting. You know, one guy was like, I wait for the tree, for the vital signs.
I think they're mistaken.
And to me, you know, I'm not saying the patient you bring in goes into cardiac arrest, you're not going to do CPR. You know,
mm-hmm.
But to sit there with a person, you know, that is having chest pain or having something going on, respiratory issues or something, and you keep popping nitro, you keep giving treatments, and you keep doing all these different things. At some point, and at some point, they need more than what we're doing for them because it's not working, mm-hmm. you know. And if you're not getting somebody to come over that, you know, can give medications that we don't have, you know, that then what's the point of being at the hospital? You could have stayed at the person's house and did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have to, you know, go to the hospital for it. So.
No, I think something's rotten in the state of Denmark with this story. I'm sorry.
Like I said, it's not just the one story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the...
No, dude, I hear you. I'm not calling you out on this. I'm just saying, all in all, you know, it's a story with a lot of posts and a lot of people that said, I've been there, and you and I both know, you sit around the ambulance bay and you talk about, you know, the patient that you had, and you're always going to have some guy come up and say, oh, you think that was bad? And, you know, Mr. Topper, I got to top you. Whatever it is that you were doing, I got to top you. Oh, you were in an extraction? Well, I was in an extraction upside down. Oh, you were extracting somebody upside down? Well, we were hanging off the overpass by a bumper. You know, I mean, come on. It's happened. It's a natural within the EMS.
All right. Let's end it there. We only got 5 minutes left, so.
Had enough?
I've had enough. I'm sick of you.
What happened to Bob?
Bob had to go, I guess. He had a call or something. He dropped off. I think he dropped off midway through my EMS manager.
Yeah, you bored the crap out of him, man.
No, I think he got a call, but I think it might have happened. So I'm sure he'll send me an email, tell me what happened. So,
hey, what happens? You know, this shows with the where EMS we work.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Listen, thanks for joining me, Josh, as always. Thanks to George and John over in the chat room. Appreciate your comments there, guys. I really appreciate your input and joining in on the conversation. I appreciate that. I want to go ahead and also just give a quick shout out to who am I giving a shout out today? Oh, Ralph Herrera, Susan Greenwald, Dr. Mel, Bob Roach, Ron Savage, and Vandar EMT, all new followers of mine on Twitter. So great to have all of them on my following list there. And Josh, until next week, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Stay safe, buddy.
All righty. All right, everybody. Again, any comments, questions you have for me or the show or Josh or anything we talked about, be sure to send them over to me. My email address, which is a little new, is admin@emsseo.com. Until next week, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman, EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.